This is In Conversation from Apple News. I'm Julia Carpenter, filling in for Shimita Basu. Today, how to become your own boss. Since the pandemic, we've seen a significant uptick in the number of people deciding to become self-employed, giving up their 9-to-5 jobs and becoming their own boss. In fact, I'm one of them. Earlier this year, I quit my full-time job at the Wall Street Journal and decided to do something I've wanted to do for a long time. I decided to go freelance. And while I love the freedom it gives me, it's scary to make the leap. Being your own boss means figuring out how to structure your day, health insurance, becoming an accountant, and setting good boundaries, which is why I called up Paco de Leon.
After I got fired from my last job, it allowed me to sit and ask, what does the world need of me? What does the world want of me? What am I good at? How can I serve?
Paco has become something of an expert on what it takes to be your own boss. She left her finance job and started her own firm called the Hell Yeah Group. She also has a book called Finance for the People, and she hosts the podcast Weird Finance. Later in this episode, Paco is going to answer your questions about making this leap into self-employment. But she started off by telling me that one of her earliest lessons came from her days playing in a band as a teenager living in LA.
We would book a show. And then what we would do, which was so sneaky, but it really like sets the tone for who I am as a person, is the day before the show, we would write to the bar and we would say, by the way, none of us are 21. However, we have reviewed the penal code, and in the city of Los Angeles, performers who are under 21 are legally permitted to be inside of the bar while performing. So here's the code, and, you know, see you tomorrow. And so those lessons were like, you know, there was no one who was going to tell us, like, this is how you hack something, this is how you get shows, this is how you build an audience, this is how you get your music out there. Small business is exactly the same thing. Everything is really up to you, and that's both terrifying and amazing.
Before we get into the specifics of how complicated all of this can be and the different minutiae of this, what are the benefits to doing this?
The benefits are you have a tremendous amount of autonomy over your day-to-day life. And to me, that's the thing that determines whether or not you like your life.
Right.
And I wish somebody would have just told that to like 18-year-old Paco, because, you know, it took me a few years to have a job, work for an employer, be miserable. And then it took me, you know, a while to be like, oh, so however you live your life day to day, all those micro moments, that's what determines like your level of joy and how you feel about who you are in the world. Okay, now that I know that, how can I back into this equation, so to speak, and fill up my life with all these moments of joy or things that I'm choosing to have a struggle with versus, you know, a plate of problems that I didn't ask for at an employer's place?
Was there a moment where you thought, okay, this is right, this is the right change for me? I'm thinking about somebody who would be listening to this and sort of searching for what that moment is.
That's a hard question, actually, because I feel like you oscillate between like, this is going to be amazing and this feels right and this is it. And then, you know, you'll kind of slide back and, you know, you'll have these setbacks. I wish I had a better answer of like, you'll be walking down the street and, you know, lightning will strike and everything will feel like it clicks. But the real deal truth is this thing that you're creating is a living, breathing thing. And some days you get your arms around it, you feel good about it. And other days you're like, should I burn this all down? You know, that's part of the ride.
I'm immediately thinking of someone who says, well, I hate selling myself. I can't be my own promoter. I hate the idea of promoting myself all the time. Is that sort of a sign like, okay, this path isn't for you? Or do you see that differently?
I think maybe we should uncover some layers there or try to do a reframe when it comes to selling ourselves. Because ultimately, when you do work for yourself, you are in charge of making connections with other individuals, and those individuals will lead you to opportunities. Those individuals are either going to be the opportunity, or they're going to say like, hey, I work with a lot of people who would be great for you. So they're like we'll call them centers of influence.
Okay.
To me, prospecting, marketing, and even the sales process, to me, that's all about just understanding who has problems and can I solve those problems? Do I know other people who can solve those problems? Can I connect them with people who can solve those problems? That's the way that I view it. It's not about like, let me, you know, da 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 da. You don't have to like do the dog and pony show, you know what I mean? I mean, yeah. It can feel like that sometimes, but if you think about it from that perspective, if I point you in the right direction and I give you value and it makes your life better, you're going to remember that. At the end of the day, running a business, working for yourself is all about a way that you can deliver something valuable or deliver a solution to somebody's problem. That's really it. Just the simplest form of what a business is, that's it at the end of the day. And so you just have to view your value or how you're helping others through that lens.
Totally. So we put out a call to our listeners. And for the most part, we noticed the callers really wanted specifics, practical things. So let's take a listen to this first one.
My name's Christina. I'm from Louisiana. I actually did leave my job to start my own business about a year ago. And I think the most challenging thing has been finding information on the business side because I'm in the service industry and I'm not well versed in actually running a business. I've used my small business development center and their resources, and that has helped me a bunch. But just finding other resources for me to learn how to be a better business owner has been really challenging.
What kind of resources would you point her to?
I mean, the thing about running a small business is everybody's going to be struggling with a different thing at a different time, right? So I think to help Christina navigate such a huge topic of business 101, right, is to kind of figure out where are your first pain points or like what, you know, what feels like it's on fire right now, because that's what it's going to be like to work for yourself. There's all sorts of different resources. The book Profit First, this is a really great book, and it was one of the things that really revolutionized the way that I thought about how to make money in my business and how to operate my business. This guy, Michael Michalowicz, I think is how you say his name. The whole premise is when you're running a small business, what you really have is, he calls it a cash eating monster. And it comes from this whole idea of like, I could write it off, right? So when you have a small business, you have all these expenses. And then at the end of the day, the way that normal accounting works, you look and you say, well, what was my profit? And he wants to flip that premise and say, you should know what you want to profit in the beginning. You should take that out. And then whatever you have left is what you get to spend. And when you start running that workflow over and over and over, what you start to see is like, oh, if I want to pay myself, we'll just use a nice round number, like $5,000 a month, I don't need to just earn $5,000 a month. I need to earn something that will probably be jarring, like $15,000 a month, because yeah. I need to account for taxes and I need to account for operating costs. That's just one example of one resource that when deployed at the right time can really change and revolutionize how you view your business and, you know, how you operate and what you need to kind of modify in order to create something that's sustainable. There's all these different online learning platforms that you can get free online courses from. You can find people who are right in your niche, right? So if you are, here's my shameless promotion. If you are a creative small business owner and you struggle with the finance piece, you struggle understanding your finances, and you want to learn more, you want to get better, you want to have more fluency, then you should sign up for my newsletter at thehellyeahgroup.com, because every week I'm going to send you small business advice along with a whole bunch of other practical links to things that are related to but not just limited to the world of finance.
So Paco, moving on to the next listener question. This one comes probably as no surprise to you. It's about healthcare. And this question came up a lot among our callers. So many people have a lot of questions about healthcare, a lot of questions about how to make it work when going freelance.
Hey, this is Ryan from Columbus, Georgia. I've always wanted to break out on my own and try to be an independent mobile app developer. But the number one thing holding me back is that I have a family with small kids, and I don't know what we would do for health insurance if I didn't have my W-2 income.
Yeah. So I think first kind of recognizing the elephant in the room is probably the best approach, in the sense that it's pretty weird that in the United States of America, that healthcare is tied to employment. It's a pretty bizarre thing to do. Nobody thought, this is great, let's do it. We're dealing with things that happened that have created the system we're living in today. So it's not great, one. Two, so when you think about paying for your own health insurance and working for yourself, there's a big leap that you're making, right? So we can think about working for yourself as walking into this house and opening up the door, and you walk straight in through the door and you're paying for your premium for you and your small family. That's how everybody's thinking about it. I would like for you to think about this relationship with, you know, self-employment and getting health insurance as climbing through a window. What are some other ways that we can still get health insurance without this full commitment of I need to pay independently out of pocket from day one? So one avenue for this fellow is you can explore whether or not it's even a possibility for you to scale back on your W-2 hours and still have health insurance. I recognize it's not a possibility for everybody, but explore it. If it is, great. Is your partner able to work? He said family. I'm assuming there's a partner there. If your partner is able to have some kind of part-time employment that would allow a health insurance plan, you know, big corporations like a bank is a good place to kind of look at these things. Could they work part-time at a bank and get health insurance? The other thing that I would urge you to explore is find out, like, do some research on what it would actually cost you to pay for insurance independently, because it might be astronomical and, you know, you might have to, again, figure out a window to climb in, but it might be something where you're like, okay, I thought it was going to be heinous and it's just a little bit painful, and I know that I could build up a book of business or build up a revenue stream that can account for this.
Yeah. I mean, I definitely climbed through that window with getting on my girlfriend's health insurance. And I was super scared to do it. I have a lot of prescriptions and I had a health concern. And I thought, oh my gosh, if I'm going to shake this up, what's going to happen? And then we sat down and literally mapped out the spreadsheet of what it would look like. And it's actually cheaper for me, which I was shocked by.
There you go. That's a great example of, like, you know, you think things are going to be so much worse than they are. And then when you actually run the numbers, you realize, like, oh, this is doable. And I think that's important for people to hear, especially with health insurance, because I really think that that is a narrative that a lot of people have. And it's a strong one. And it really has its grip on people. And they're like, this is why I have to stay at my job. And that's not always true.
Yeah. Let's move on to another listener call. The next question is about how to prepare financially for taking this leap.
Hi, my name is Jonathan. I'm from Phoenix, Arizona. And my question about becoming self-employed is, what kind of a buffer would you have for savings between quitting your full-time job with an employer and starting your own self-employment business?
I love this question from Jonathan because I think it's what holds a lot of people back. They think, I'm already scrimping, or I'm already feeling like I come up short. How can I prepare for this?
There's two different ways to think about this. One, everybody needs an emergency fund. Everybody needs a personal emergency fund. The textbook definition of a personal emergency fund is 3 to 6 months of your monthly spend. Now, you can say just your fixed expenses, or you could say whatever you spend every month, because, you know, you don't want to give up your gym membership. Whatever that number is, multiply by 3, 4, 5, or 6, and that's going to be the baseline for your emergency fund. And I think that's really important for people to have before they jump ship. Now, self-employed folks, freelancers, they might be dealing with more uncertainty than their traditional employed folks. So for some of you, you might not be able to sleep at night with just 3 months or just 6 months. Some of you want 9 months. And I've heard of people who want a whole year. I personally think that's too much cash, but I think I really love risk. So the other thing to really think about is, in a perfect world, under perfect conditions, you are building your freelance business on the side while you are still employed. And it doesn't have to look like two full-time jobs. It could look like full-time W-2 employment and very, very part-time freelance work. And then you slowly rebalance. And then you talk to your employer and you say, hey, can I work instead of 40 hours a week? Can I work 30 hours a week? And over time, what you do is, you know, you move away from your employer and then you replace that income with your freelance work. Of course, easier said than done. That's the quote unquote, you know, ideal, best, perfect conditions way to make that transition. I realize that's not how it goes down for everybody.
Yeah. We're talking about sort of tiptoeing, ready to do this sort of bit by bit.
Stone by stone.
Stone by stone. Totally. The next listener call is from someone who has a question about finding balance as a self-employed person and structuring time.
My name is Renault and I live in Orlando, Florida, and I already have a small business which consists of flying drones for photography purposes. My question today is, how do you change from the corporate mindset, which consists of structure, to a mindset of self-motivation and continue between the ups and downs?
Oh, that's a hard one. When I first started working for myself, I was like, hip, hip, hooray, I'm free. I set no alarm clock. I woke up whenever the hell I wanted. And then whatever time it was, I was like, I'm going to exercise. I would get on my bike and I would go on a little bike ride. Then I would come back and then I would say, like, I'm going to go to any random coffee shop. And I would go to any random coffee shop. I would get there and the Wi-Fi wouldn't work, or I'd get there and just like something about it, I couldn't do what I thought I would do.
Yeah.
And then I would get home and I'm like, well, it's 3 o'clock in the afternoon. I'm either going to call it a day or I'm going to end up working until, you know, 10 o'clock at night. And so I was completely unstructured. What I recognized over time and failing over those years was I just needed to have a structure that worked for me. I guess that's the thing I want to convey, is that you have to have boundaries and you have to determine what those boundaries look like. And then you have to figure out all the ways that you need to trick your brain into, you know, making sure that you comply with those boundaries as frequently as possible.
My girlfriend jokes that I have a bad boss, meaning that I'm the bad boss. You know, I'm already struggling with shutting the laptop down, with not working on the weekends. And I think that's because you feel like there's no end, you know, that you could always, if you're working for yourself, you could always be doing it.
Yeah. I think you have to decide that it's time to unlearn that mindset. I think it's really the world we live in today, society, especially American society, rewards people for being busy. It rewards people in terms of whatever behaviors make you a workaholic. And so, you know, in order to not be that person, I wish I had better advice. You have to really choose actively and you have to decide that you're not going to be that person. And then how you set up your day is up to you.
Yeah. Yeah. Since we're talking about scheduling and boundaries, how do you decide how many sick days to take, how many vacation days you can afford to take? What's some practical advice for building that into your life?
So knowing when you need to rest is tremendously important, because you're going to risk harming yourself and your business in the long run. Like, from a practical standpoint, like how much time off you can take, you want to make sure that you're earning enough money each month so that you are running a sustainable business, that you are paying yourself, that you are saving for taxes, and that you are putting money away for the future. It is terrifying to say, I'm going to dig my heels in, I'm going to throw a wrench in the gear, and I'm going to do a hard stop for 4 weeks or 3 weeks or 2 weeks. But you have to do it. You have to take time away. You have to take a pause. You have to rest. And even if you don't go anywhere, or, you know, it doesn't have to be anything tremendously fancy, but you have to take care of yourself, because at the end of the day, it's you, it's your business. You're the one. You have to be a healthy one. No one else is going to run it for you.
Yeah. What do people not think about? Are there going to be certain things that our system, either our tax system or our economic system, privileges, you know, employees and full-time employees over freelancers or small business owners, employers?
The big bias that a lot of people have is this idea. They have this narrative that the tax code is rigged, rich versus poor.
Hmm.
And in a lot of ways, Julia, that's absolutely true. But the way that it's rigged is employer versus employee or asset owner versus wage worker. And so when you work for yourself, you have a lot of levers to pull and things you can manipulate and change and flexibility. The tax code is one of those things. Employees, they don't have that leverage. They get their paycheck, taxes are taken out, and then they're going to go pay for their, what's a good example for you because you're a writer? They're going to go pay for their Microsoft Office with the money that they've already paid taxes on. But for you, since you're a small business owner, you're a freelancer, you're going to pay for your Microsoft Office with pre-tax dollars. And that right there is just one of several ways that self-employed folks, freelancers, and small business owners are able to leverage the tax code in their favor.
Last question for you, Paco. Are there ways that you think our society benefits from having more people in entrepreneurial or independent lines of work? I'm thinking, you know, should we be thinking about ways to better support people doing this?
So on the one hand, I think more people would take a risk and do something on their own if they had more safety nets. But on the other hand, I don't think entrepreneurship is right for everyone. And so I think knowing yourself, knowing what you want out of your life, what you're good at, where what your strengths and what your weaknesses are will help you determine whether or not it makes sense for you to work for yourself. For me, I would say I went to work for myself because I felt like I couldn't earn enough working for somebody else. And I've made a lot of adjustments and I've made it work for me and I'm better for it. That's not the case with everyone. It would have been cool if I was part of a union and I could collectively bargain and get paid enough so that I wasn't riding my bike 14 miles every day to save $40 on gas or planting lettuce seeds in my garden in Echo Park to save $2 on buying lettuce.
Wow.
That would have been chill. And it took a while for me to figure it out. I slowly stepped away from the more formal financial world. I sat quietly every day after I got fired from my last job, which thankfully, actually, because that gave me unemployment, which I cheekily call my universal basic income. And it allowed me to sit quietly every day and ask, what does the world need of me? What does the world want of me? What am I good at? How can I serve? And the thing that kept bubbling up was, hey, buddy, why don't you try to help your community with this finance thing? Those tools are very sharp in your toolbox. And why don't you have a go at it? And so what you're witnessing, what you're seeing, is just me trying to figure out a way to answer that question and the evolution of all those things.
Paco, thank you so much for making the time to speak today.
It's my pleasure, Julia. Thanks.
You can listen to Weird Finance with Paco de Leon on Apple Podcasts. We'll include a link to it on our show notes page.